Welcome to the Questo Show.
All right, welcome to a bonus episode of Cinema Crespediso, a spoiler episode. This is when we talk about a particular movie, we get spoilery about it, in case you couldn't tell from the title of the episode, which is, I'm pretty sure, something like, spoiler episode, hyphen, Interstellar.
Hyphen Interstellar? Are you going to spell hyphen?
Maybe.
That'd be interesting.
We'll see. Probably not. That's Drew Sircogburn. Drew, how's it going?
It's going, dude. What's up?
Yeah, I didn't set that up, dude.
It doesn't matter.
We're recording this before we record our normal episode, which we're going to do in a little bit, episode 96. This is our separate spoiler-heavy bonus episode. We're just going to talk about Interstellar because there's a lot going on in that movie when we talk about it in normal Cinema Crespity, so we're not going to be able to get as detailed as we like.
We don't want to give it away.
We don't want to give things away.
There are lots of big stuff.
Lots of big stuff
going on.
Lots of big things. Matt Damon, hello.
out of nowhere. Not just Matt Damon.
Just get that out of the way.
Matt Damon, bad guy.
Get that out there and out of the way, right?
Out of nowhere, old man Damon.
Completely, he didn't do any press, any marketing, didn't tell anyone he was in it. Sworn to secrecy.
And then boom.
And then he pops up. Okay, all right, Now we're getting ahead of ourselves. All right, let's go to the beginning. Interstellar. We just saw this yesterday.
Yes.
On that sweet old
IMAX.
The digital IMAX.
Yeah, it still looks pretty good.
I mean, yeah, of course it looks great. It's just, I mean, I bet you too, if we even saw side by side the IMAX digital and the IMAX film, like 70 millimeter print, I bet you we'd even be like, the difference is negligible. But still, just the fact, just the experience of being able to see it on film as intended would have been nice. Still pretty sweet. We saw it at the point.
Awesome.
Saw it at the Point Orlando. So, how about this? IMAX real quick. You know how you go to, when you go to like, the IMAX at AMC Altamont or at Waterford Lakes, when you see movies there, you get a warning before the movie starts where it's like very starkly tells you this is not the IMAX experience. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But that, we didn't get that at the Point Orlando IMAX, even though it's still digital.
Because technically it's still an IMAX screen.
I guess because the screen, the size of the screen. Yeah. I mean, that's a fucking huge screen. Every time I walk into that theater, how many times I go there, every time I walk into that theater, I see the size of that screen, and it's just like, Jesus Christ, we're going to watch something on this?
Yes.
Even the M&M's commercials are like, holy cow, that's an epic M&M commercial.
It is. I mean, the screen is huge. The sound is booming.
The sound.
It's an experience.
Let's talk about that sound.
What, and how some of it was too loud for the dialogue?
Okay, first off, yeah, some of it was too loud for the dialogue. I could still hear what was being said.
Not clearly, though.
Yeah, it was definitely being overpowered, but there was never a point where I could not understand what was being said personally. I know I've read online a lot of people have had problems with Interstellar screenings throughout the country where the sound is so loud, the rumbling of the bass or whatever drowns out the dialogue. And I can definitely pinpoint where that was happening for other people.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, thank God I could still understand what they were saying.
I mean, I could understand them. It just kind of took a little bit of extra hearing.
Yeah, it's like, what? Yeah, you do have to like focus in a little bit. And then the score, it's so like bass heavy and rumbly.
Yeah.
It's just like things are vibrating.
Dude, the first like 15 seconds of the movie, I thought we were like launching in a rocket.
Yeah. Yeah, the way like, they hit you with the bass.
It was literally shaking the seats.
Because it opens with him, he's flying the, he's doing a jet fighter thing.
Yeah.
Like,
test pilot.
He's a test pilot. Yes, test pilot. Exactly. That reminded me very much of, and I know for a fact that this is, you know, a touching stone for Nolan making this movie. It reminded me a lot of Do the Right Thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's Spike Lee.
Yes. It
has nothing to do with this movie. The Right Stuff. Do the Right Stuff. The Right Stuff. Yeah. Did you ever see the Right Stuff?
Yes.
3-hour epic film about the beginnings of the space, mm-hmm. Space agency, NASA. And that movie starts with, because just like the book, which I haven't read. I need to read the book. It starts with all the test pilots, the jet test pilots in America before NASA was like, we're going to put these guys in space. Those are the guys NASA went to, like, we're going to use these guys.
Because they're crazy.
Because they're crazy. And they're daredevils. And they also happen to have, like, perfect vision. And they can fit in cockpits and other things, too. So Matthew McConaughey is one of these guys. And the movie starts... Sam Shepard is one of those guys in the right stuff. Bet you this movie was made early 80s. McConaughey role could have been Sam Shepard. Totally. It could have been Sam Shepard. And then the soundtrack, the bass is like... And your seat's vibrating.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then 40 minutes later when... they very quickly get into the rocket and take off.
And they're launching.
Like, no time spent whatsoever. It's 40 minutes of them, like, establishing the world, the blight, the lack of food, the relationship between the father and the kids.
Nope.
And then all of a sudden, it's just like, rocket.
By the way, space.
Get in. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You're like, wait, we're in outer space.
Yep.
There's no,
nope.
no training.
Nope.
No, here's, let's fit your first suit.
No training montage, no suit fitting, no. This is what you got to prepare for.
Let's go. Let's go over to mission ahead of time.
Nope.
No.
Get in that rocket and you go save the fucking human race.
We'll prep you along the way. It's pretty funny. I was like, holy shit, this is happening fast.
Yeah.
But then when the rocket goes off and it's just, in the IMAX theater with the 10,000 watts of sound, this shit was.
Shaking again, yes.
Just like, you know, pretty much I can imagine, like, hey, this is what it's... It's like their version of the D-Box seats, the motion seats. Like, we'll just cheat.
We'll just pump enough bass in there.
We'll just make the whole theater rumble. I read a thing where it was... What was it? It was an interview with Jonathan Nolan, co-writer.
The brother.
Who, he actually wrote the script working for Spielberg.
Okay.
In, like, 08. When Spielberg was going to direct it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, for a reason, Spielberg dropped off. Nolan took it to his brother. And his brother was like, yeah, I can do something with this, for sure. This is up my alley. So they worked on it together. Christopher Nolan finished it. His brother said that he was on the set. And it was him, his brother, and McConaughey. And they were going, you know, the name dropper.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how they built the set, and it's all real stuff.
Yeah.
They got to get into the rocket ship cockpit. They had to climb like 4 flights of stairs to get to the top. And then once they were in there, Christopher Nolan had already pre-rendered the special effects that were going to happen in the movie.
Okay.
And he had them set up around the outside of their spaceship, so that when you're inside the cockpit and you're looking out the windows, you're seeing like outer space or like the planet or the spaceship.
The world spinning.
Yes, you see all that shit.
That's
like,
cool.
So it's all like in camera practical effects too, which is really cool. And you can see it there. And then like they strapped him into the seat, and then it was like the shit was like they were vibrating the whole thing, like they were taking off and shit. And he was like, it's as real as it can get.
Yeah.
You know, without actually awesome. Having to send these motherfuckers. Yeah. Like Apollo 13. Right, which is the first movie that filmed actors in zero G.
Yeah,
they used the vomit rocket, that plane that makes those crazy like up and down curves and kind of simulates a weightlessness, and something like 1 out of every 5 people get sick on it, something like that. They filmed on that. That's crazy. That's ballsy. That's Ron Howard. That's a different movie. We're talking about Interstellar. So the movie starts out. Future post-apocalyptic, but a dusty.
Well, yeah.
A dusty, dirty post-apocalypse.
Well, yeah. I mean, apparently everything has collapsed. There's no more need for armies or this, that, or the other. People need to farm because we're running out of food.
Yeah. Apparently all the governments of the world, they're like, we don't need war anymore because we're all dying.
Yeah, pretty much.
If that's what it takes. That's what it takes.
Hey, you've seen Watchmen. You know what it takes.
Oh, yeah. That's that too. I think worldwide blight is more likely than a faking
of a giant squid monster
or faking a superhero freakout.
Mm-hmm.
If you go by the movie,
right.
Anyway. It's Dust Bowl. There's dust storms. They just ran out of okra.
Yep, the blight killed it all.
The last of the okra just happened to be next to. That's nice.
Yep.
And so McConaughey, he's a test pilot. He's forced to farm.
Grow corn. Gotta grow that corn.
It's pretty. I like the detail of. Did it really serve any other purpose? I like the detail in the beginning, which just ended up being like a 5-10 minute thing, where the the Indian military drone.
Yeah.
Like, came swooping in low, and they managed to, like, take control of it and brought it down and, like, harvest parts out of it. And then they're like, yeah, you know, since, I mean, military, the Indian military, they lost touch with this thing 10 years ago when they shut down. So it's just been flying around.
Yeah.
I mean, is that it? Or are they talking about, was it about, like, robots that were sent out into the world, kind of clone-like things, drone, just going on? Where are they going with that? Because he gets the parts.
Well, because they have drones, obviously.
They have drones. They establish that. They establish that our guy is good with electronics.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
Yeah.
And just to emphasize how everything's really falling apart.
Yeah.
That the government drones just flying around on their own.
Exactly, because, you know, they're not connected to anything anymore. The military has been shut down for 10 years. This thing's been circling the planet with nothing to do.
Yeah.
So they're going to repurpose it. Make a combine out of the thing.
Yeah, that's right. They made combines. That's what he was doing. And then when all the combines went bad, they have to call him.
Yeah.
He's the Combine Geek Squad guy.
Yes, he is.
He's on call. Just kind of...
Gravitational anomalies, man.
So, yeah. So the gravitational anomalies start happening where it's like the books are falling off the shelves and it's like, it's a ghost. Should we just like go ahead and say what's going on?
I mean, if we're going to talk about gravitational anomalies, might as well just get the cat out of the bag.
It's the spoiler episode.
Yeah.
I did figure when she was like, it's a ghost. And it's like, well, it can't be a ghost. You got the theories. Yeah. And, you know, starts talking about all that shit. It is drow. I was thinking, is it him? Is he communicating from like another from the future or something? Communicating backwards?
Yes, he is.
And then I was like, what? But the whole movie's gonna be about time, and he's going forward in time. How can you communicate backwards in time? So then I kind of dismissed it.
Gravity.
There's something about gravity and alternate dimensions. Turns out, spoiler alert, that's the whole point of the show. It was McConaughey. It was him. Yeah. I was like, oh,
he's in a book. He's in a book dimension.
He was in a book dimension. What?
Well, apparently that's the only way they can represent time visually for the human brain.
Which was an interesting way to represent time as a dimension.
Yeah.
To see
as its own physical thing.
One physical place with the physical things happening in it, but like a whole, like a filing shelf full of it, like every single day, every moment.
Yeah. Look, if at a certain point in time you need to, you know, get somewhere, make something happen, you gotta be able to get there physically.
You gotta get there. So what I also found funny. So okay, so the book dimension's at the end.
Yes.
But in the beginning, the books are falling off the shelves, and there's like binary codes being written in dust and sand, and it leads them to NASA.
It leads them to NORAD.
It leads them to NORAD. That's right. It was NORAD, where NASA has set up.
Yes.
That's a detail that I That's not even pick up on. That's a detail I didn't pick up on. It leads them to NORAD, which is NASA set up in secret to do space exploration to colonize. Save the planet, right?
Yes.
Save the species, not the
save
planet.
The species.
Save the species. Fuck the planet. Planet's done. But then this was weird. At first I thought it was weird, because they show up because of all these anomalies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, I know this guy. And he's like, hey, you're a pilot. Hey, we need a pilot. All right, you're going. You know, like
yeah.
And I was like, oh, that was kind of weirdly convenient.
Yeah.
And then they got into space so quickly. I was like, man, they're really trying to, like, they don't want us to think about how convenient that was. But then it turns out at the end.
Well, it turns out at the end it really wasn't that convenient.
It's a loop thing.
Yeah, it was because Matthew McConaughey had to go to NORAD so he could get into space so he could cross the event horizon, go into the book dimension, tell his young daughter all of these silly things, and then, you know, come out at the end.
He had to send himself and then give her the information.
Exactly.
To save everyone.
Yes.
But it had to happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because he knew where he was going. That's how he knew to send the coordinates, because he knew he had to get to NORAD. So he said, all right, put in these coordinates.
So when you're doing time travel movies, you got two things going on, right? You got two versions. You got the time is circular.
Yes.
And then you got
time is linear.
Alternate dimensions.
Yes.
Went off.
That's linear time.
Linear time. Okay. Time is circular is Terminator.
Yes.
Right? John Connor had to send back his father back in time to have sex with his mom
so he
to give birth
made.
To him so he'd be made and, you know,
so on and so forth.
Keep a cycle going. Back to the Future when they when Biff brought the book back from 2015.
Split dimension.
A whole other linear thing was going on. Yeah. When Marty McFly started disappearing, it was like another dimension, yep. Right? He was wiping himself out of that timeline. Interstellar is
circular.
Flat circle.
Time to flat circle.
Crumbled up piece of paper.
Yep.
It's a diamond with many facets. Yes. I think that's a Watchmen thing. I think Dr. Manhattan might have said that in the Watchmen book, how he perceived time. He saw it like as a diamond, yeah. As a gem. Like perceived it all, everything at once. Because that's what the fifth dimension was, right?
Yeah.
So you're seeing all of time at once.
Yeah, because...
As opposed to being in one part and looking, you know, future.
Exactly.
The way our stupid human brains have come up with this. Mm-hmm. So... McConaughey, outer space, with Anne Hathaway,
mm-hmm.
with Catwoman,
yes,
with a random black guy. I've never seen that guy before.
I think I might have seen him before, but I don't necessarily know his name or what I saw him in.
That dude, Wes Bentley, who last time I saw him was the first Hunger Games.
He's the guy with the weird,
crazy facial hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he made him like drink hemlock at the end or something like that.
Sure, I don't necessarily remember
something
that.
Like he had like poisoned himself or something. And was that the whole crew? Oh, and then they got the robot dudes.
Yeah,
which are you're cute, you know, interesting designs. They look kind of bulky to be doing so many different tasks.
Well,
like,
I mean,
they didn't have any points of articulation yet. They're opening, and closing things, and carrying things, and one of them had to like. Do the crazy docking sequence, which involved
that joystick.
Well, I
mean, they kind of had... Well, I mean, I guess maybe we couldn't see the points of articulation. Because at one point in time, not only was he moving very fast, but he was also carrying Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, all of a sudden he grew
all
other...
arms.
Yeah, he had arms and it's like... That was a crazy sight when it's like... It started rotating and moving super fast
and
through all that water. Yeah. I was like, holy shit, that thing's intense. And there's like this whole thing about the humor setting and the truth setting and all that. And
yeah, yeah.
Interesting how they throw that in there. Definitely, Nolan was going for a thing where it was like he was trying to like because like 2001 is all about the technology and the evolution theories. It's a very cold movie. It's very telling that in 2001 the most memorable character is Hal, the computer.
He's so cold and monotone.
Yeah,
and it's like the baseline for the movie.
Pretty interesting, right?
Yeah.
Interstellar is like, we want to have all the same...
The exact opposite, pretty much.
We want to, like, emotionally, with content, we're going the exact opposite. We're going to take the same approach to the way it looks and the designs and the science of it. The science of it's going to be as real as possible.
Yeah.
But we're still going to throw a very emotional story in here.
It's very warm, emotional core.
Which then it makes sense when you find out that Spielberg was working on this thing for a few years.
The second you said Spielberg was working on it, I was like, that's why it's all goopy and emotional. And
that's where all
love is the one thing that transcends both space and
time.
That's
the one thing. Imagine if he made it. It would be closer to Close Encounters than 2001, right? But I think it works for Nolan because it seems like it's his... first foray, even though he's now been making mainstream movies for a while, it seems like this first try at making a movie that could still appeal to an even wider audience.
Yeah, not just, you know, the science fiction junkies.
Not just science fiction stuff, right? You know, like the Batman movies are obviously they made a ton of money. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like them, but they're really, those are dark crime action Batman movies, right? Inception is a very heady sci-fi heisty type movie. Definitely more male skewed than anything. Interstellar is totally like, look, we got
everything.
We got strong female characters. We got the daddy-daughter thing going on. As well as a little bit of father something.
Yeah.
That was like the one relationship that felt the most extraneous.
Yeah.
Like and then the whole thing with the, he didn't want to leave the house, or he didn't want the kids to leave, and the dust storm, but they were getting sick.
Yeah, Topher Grace was the doctor.
Topher Grace was the doctor? What was that all about? Spoiler, Topher Grace pops up. That was like,
weird.
I don't know about this Topher guy. He's okay. Is it going to turn into Venom anytime soon?
I hope not.
Right. But yeah, it's definitely, instead of the coldness of 2001, it's the warmth and emotional center of like an E.T. and the Close Encounters.
It's 2000 with heart.
And it definitely feels like Nolan is kind of bridging the gap there between a Kubrick and a Spielberg. He's trying to do a movie that would combine the two sensibilities, which doesn't always necessarily work. If you think of like A.I.,
Yeah, that was horrible.
You think it was horrible? I haven't seen it in so long. We'll just ignore this. I haven't heard this. We threw this at the last second here, so versus the world. Check out episode 96 for Juice the Cosplay versus the world. Yeah, it's like he's trying to bridge that gap there, because I haven't seen AI in forever, but AI is that, you know, it's a Kubrick project that Spielberg ended up making, and you can see the two sides, the two different artistic takes clashing with each other. One wants to be emotional and not necessarily feel good, but still grounded in that reality, whereas the other one wants to be like fucking robots and
cold
and the coldness, and this is the world that has developed, and you know, this is the shit. It's the Full Metal Jacket of sci-fi.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right. And I feel like this is more successful in bringing those two worlds together. You know, and it's obviously not perfect.
No.
Because nothing is. The whole, like, Casey Affleck is good, but I felt like his grown-up version of his character was kind of...
just kind of there.
Kind of there. A little, almost felt like a way to add an antagonistic force.
Well, that,
when it really
to,
didn't need to be there.
Well, they had to figure out some way for Jessica Chastain to get back to the house to have her epiphany of sorts.
She could
have
just gone back to the house on her own. She didn't have to be this whole thing about the kids. She could have just been like... because she was going through some emotional shit.
Yeah.
Like she said, because in the beginning, right before McConaughey leaves, he's like, hey, you know, maybe when I come back, because he explains the time thing, how time is different, mm-hmm. where he's going to go. He's like, maybe when I come back,
we'll be the same age.
And then the one message she sends him throughout the whole time is like, hey, it's my birthday. We're the same age. You're not here, so fuck you.
Yep.
And but because of that, you know, all right, now she's in a state. She's in an emotional state. The Michael Caine, the older character who's become like a surrogate kind of father type thing in all the intervening 20 years. He's dying. He dies. You know, so she's in a fucked up state. She could have just gone back to the house because she's like looking for something. Looking for something emotional, then stumbles across, oh, actually, here's the Secret City Universe via Morse code on my daddy's watch.
Yes.
Long story. Long story. No wonder no one would believe her.
No shit.
You know, no, these came from another dimension.
the gravity dimension.
They're written by gravity on my watch.
My dad's using gravity to communicate.
My future, my past future daddy.
Yes.
Because when that comes around. So where are we? I'm trying to go through the movie chronologically.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, right? So they go into space. They got the crew. And they're like, there's all these worlds. We sent out all these explorers. When they first walked in and they had all the pictures of the 12 explorers, the 12 people that went onto the 12 possible planets through the wormhole with hopes that at least one of them would have a signal saying that the planet was good and okay. Did you notice? Obviously, you didn't notice Matt Damon was up. He had to have been up there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I bet you if we go back and watch the movie now, like, there he is. He's right fucking there right in front of us. But we didn't.
And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if they got other silly people to hop in those suits, just throw pictures of him like up on there.
Over on the left, there's George Clooney.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Or, you know, John Goodman's over there in the middle. You know,
oh, man.
Something
big,
silly like
big
that.
Big fat John Goodman. Yeah. That would be pretty awesome.
Or maybe it's pictures of, like, Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, it's like, I made it to outer space. This is the closest I can get to outer space. So they're looking for, they got three planets. They're like, these three planets have signals. The beacons went off that said that they're reporting good data, and at least two of the people are still alive.
Yep.
Because that's what the data that was coming back to them, right? So they go through the wormhole. Crazy sequence. That was a crazy sequence.
Yeah, that wormhole sequence was pretty insane.
We can't just skip over the wormhole sequence. First they had to sleep for 2 years.
Yeah, first they had to sleep for 2 years, and they had to wake up.
To get to Saturn.
Go through wormhole. Crazy stuff. Wormhole person?
Wormhole. You mean the...
Future McConaughey? Future McConaughey coming through the past to shake hands with.
It just looked like... when it was happening the first time, it looked like a person to you.
I could tell... I could tell that it was some sort of being because I could see the torso and the arm.
You could see that?
Yeah.
I just saw a distortion.
Through the distortion of the light.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh, man, it's like a distorted. Then she was like reaching out, her hand was getting distorted. I was like, oh, don't do that. You're gonna hurt yourself somehow. But
it's them.
But it was them. Yeah.
Slash McConaughey.
Which is McConaughey.
Slash Fuchsia McConaughey.
It was them slash us.
Yes.
Which is what that is all
about.
Yes. I didn't catch that first time. But the wormhole thing was like, it was all like. How would you even describe it?
It looked like a liquid mirror. It looked like they were going through like a tunnel of liquid mirror.
Yeah. That'd be a good way. Yeah. And another very loud sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Very
lots of things shaking.
Seat rumbling. Like, goddamn, guys. All the screws are going to fall loose in this room in there. This is just going to fall apart. So they get through the wormhole, and now they're in just like a whole other, they're in a fucking other dimension totally. Well, not another dimension, they're in another space, solar system, galaxy.
Yes.
What have you, whatever.
They use the wormhole.
Not an Alpha Centauri, but something similar, right? Three planets. And then I really liked this setup. I was like, all right, there's three planets. We gotta try to check them out. We gotta decide which one we're gonna go to. Then at one point, they're like, all right, now there's two planets. We only got enough fuel for one. What are we gonna do? I was like, oh, this is intriguing.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of good stuff going on here. That whole middle section I thought was pretty fantastic.
I really liked, you know, the first planet because it had the whole time warp thing where every hour down there on that planet because of the black hole was... what, like 7 years something?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're down there for like maybe 20 minutes of film time and they come back and it's been 24 years.
Well, it was because if 1 hour was 7 years and they got stuck because the water flooded the ship,
yeah,
and he was like, it's going to take like 45 minutes to an hour to dry this thing. They came back, said it was 23 years. So they must have been stuck down there for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Just 3 hours passed of them on this water planet. Which, I guess because of the gravitational forces of Gargantua, the black hole that the planet is right next to, it's causing these mountain-sized waves.
Well, yeah,
because
it seemed like everything else was about 6 inches of water.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Then these, literally, it looks like a 5-mile wave is coming out.
Yeah, mountain, it's, and they get stuck in one of them.
Yeah.
Fucking Wes Bentley. This was a little... Okay, so they land on that planet, and they're like, we got to do this quick. One guy, I like how one guy stays behind. It's like, you guys go there. I'll stay behind and try to learn as much from the black hole as I can. And then when they come back, he's like all gray-haired and
shit. Well, yeah, he's like, it's been 21 years!
And he's got the look of someone who's like, I haven't seen another person in forever.
He
like,
hasn't. He hasn't seen another person in 21 years.
Yeah. That's intense. That's almost like, that's a whole other movie right there that we just skipped over.
Yeah.
Like, all this shit was happening over there. We just totally skipped it. So they go down there to find the beacon and to find the person. They find out that it's crashed. The person's probably dead. And then here comes the wave. And they're like, oh, shit, these are waves.
We got to go.
But then she gets stuck, right? So they got to send out the robot thing.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the whole time, Wes Bentley, he's standing there, like, just outside the ship. But he's, like, watching. He's like, come on, let's go, you know? And then, but for whatever reason, he's the last one
to get on the
ship. He could have been like, let me get in the ship and then help carry Anne Hathaway.
Yeah,
in.
No. He waits. Robots and women first.
Robots and women first. Everyone knows robots and women first. Very good.
And then the wave comes and he
dies. The wave comes, gets him right at the ass. Boom, destroys him. We don't see Wes Bentley ever again.
At least his body.
Was that his body? Yeah, I think that was his body. Yeah. I was like, ooh, you're stuck on that planet for a very long time. They finally get off that planet. Mad years have passed. And then you call this because from watching the trailers. All right, now little girl's become Jessica Chastain.
Yeah.
Then little boy has become Casey Affleck.
Yep.
Right, you called that.
I called that.
And then they go to the next planet because, like, this is one where the beacon says that this dude is probably still alive.
Yeah.
And then this is, like, this man, this Captain Man, who everyone's like, oh, he's the best. They keep talking over and over.
No, it was the other guy who was the best. They didn't go to the guy who was the best.
No, they did. Man was the guy. The other guy, the one that didn't go to, was the one that Anne Hathaway was in love with.
Yeah, but that was the one that was the best.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Man's the best.
No.
Yes.
Wrong.
That's why it's so sad that he's the one who hits the beacon and lies.
But I thought she fell in love with the guy that was the best. That's what they were talking about.
No.
And then they decided not to go to that one.
No.
Because she loved him.
No, you got it backwards. They decided not to go to that one because she got outvoted 2-1.
Okay.
Because Black Guy was like, we got to put up the vote. And then right there, she was like, fuck. Fuck. Because it was Man. Man was the best. And that's why it was so sad that when they get there, he turns out that he lied about the data. The planet was completely inhospitable because the ammonia levels. He broke.
He couldn't take it.
He needed someone to come get him. He couldn't just die out there.
Nope.
Even though he said he was prepared to, he put himself to sleep with no wake date on his hyper sleep thing, you know. So they get to the thing and they open it up, and it's Matt Damon. First off, all right, cool, it's Matt Damon. But and then you know the theater was pretty full, and I was like, oh shit, it's Matt Damon, right? You know. But here's the thing: I feel like when that happens, it kind of takes you out of the movie a little bit.
A little.
It's like all of a sudden, it's like, oh, that's not just this guy, this legendary dude. It's Matt Damon.
Yeah.
It would have been better, I think, if they had, like, shown a picture of this person, this man person ahead of time, and it was just some random dude that we really didn't know, a random actor. Or maybe even show us that it's Matt Damon ahead of time. You know, oh, this guy was Matt Damon. Maybe we'll get to see him later. And then when it pops up and it's him, then it doesn't take us out at the moment in the movie. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a cameo surprise. Oh, shit. Anyway, that's just on the first viewing. And on subsequent viewings, when you're prepared for it, it's not going to be, like, so jarring or whatever. But then, yeah, you pointed out Matt Damon shows up to be the bad guy.
Yep. I was wondering what the antagonist was going to be in this movie.
What was that? Like an hour and 45 minutes into the movie before he even pops up?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no bad guy. The bad guy
is the situation.
Is the situation, which is very science fiction of them. It's the world is crumbling. Time is against them. Because
literally.
Because of the way they're racing against it. And shit just goes wrong. You know, it just things aren't going as planned. That's what's all the forces of antagonism are coming from.
Yeah.
He wants to be with his daughter, et cetera, et cetera. So there's still plenty of drama without there being a per se bad guy. Then Matt Damon shows up, bad guy.
Yep.
Like, I'm a crazy dude now.
Yep, I'm gonna break your helmet, and we're gonna have a fist fight on this weird planet, and then I'm gonna go blow up the black dude, and then I'm gonna get myself exploded.
Well, he didn't blow up black dude. I think he set up because he had all the data.
Well,
and the
thing.
He booby trapped it, right? It was a booby trap.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then black dude blew up. Yep. It's like, oh, that sucks, black guy. Black guy, we hardly knew ye. That's why we just call him black guy. What's his name, like Romilly or something?
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
I mean, he stayed behind. He gave us a little bit of dialogue, not a very well-rounded character.
And then he got exploded.
And then he exploded, but wasn't the first to die. That's Wes Bentley.
Yes.
So, at least that. At least it's not that racist. All right. Thank God for that. So Matt Damon, he's a bad guy,
mm-hmm.
and then there's that whole crazy scene. This is fun when he gets in the ship ahead of them. And he's trying to get to the Endurance that's in orbit.
Yeah.
And they're like, if they get to the Endurance and they fly off, like, we're fucked. We have no way.
We're stuck.
We're stuck here. We have no way to get nowhere ever. So the whole race to get back to Endurance. Matt Damon can't lock up. He can't sink.
Connect properly.
He can't connect properly with the airlock.
And then everything explodes.
Yes. Because he's like, I'm gonna open this airlock anyway. And then shit blows up. Very intense scene.
Yes.
Sends the Endurance in the spiral.
Yes.
68 RPMs.
And then then it's time to what? Catch up to the Endurance.
Match its speed.
Match its speed, match its spin,
yeah.
And then get the airlock correct so they can
hook up correct, which Matt Damon could even do when the thing was like just floating there.
Yeah.
And now they gotta do it at 68 RPM.
Yep.
And Hathaway passes out. Matthew McConaughey.
During the spin.
McConaughey is like on the verge. He's like, oh. He's just making that face. He's like,
it's that G-Force face.
He can't do nothing. He's stuck. He can't do nothing. And they send the robot. Oh, no articulation robot to do the thing. And it works. See, he gets it. And I was like, holy shit, good job. What was it? Was that TARS? Or was that what's the other one? It was TARS and CASE?
Yeah, TARS and CASE.
And there was a third one, I think. Anyway, so, and they got him to do it. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right. And TARS is the one that they send through the black hole.
Yeah. Well, right after this scene, yeah.
Him and McConaughey go through the black hole. Yeah. So they get into the Endurance, and they're like, all right, we got to find a way to, we're going to use the.
It's like, we're out of fuel, we're out of this, blah, blah, blah.
So we're going to use the gravitational pull from the black hole to spin us into the direction of the black hole.
Well, there's a
no,
huge.
No, of the next planet.
There's a huge thing that you missed in the middle.
What happened?
Why are they just going to the third planet and not trying to get home, Chris?
Because there's no way for them to get home, right, from that point?
Well, that, and there's no reason for them to get home, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's when they find out through messages from Earth that, okay, so Michael Caine's character, who's the one who's building the whole NASA thing.
Had the whole plan A, plan B.
Plan A, get everyone off Earth to a new planet. Yep. Plan B, find a new planet.
And let everybody on Earth die.
And let everyone on Earth die. Find a new planet and colonize it with, we got
clones,
like all the,
stuff.
We're going to make clones.
Yeah.
We're making clones. And then it turns out that on his deathbed, he tells them all, Jessica Chastain.
There's this giant equation that never worked.
But he
could never get through, but he couldn't tell anybody because then they wouldn't be able to do plan B.
They wouldn't have hope.
Yeah.
No one would have hope. No one would work towards saving the species in any way. Right?
Exactly.
It would just devolve. So he's been holding this in the whole time. And so kind of fraudulent.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Parts of the mission are kind of fraudulent. They sent McConaughey out there with him thinking he might be able to get back.
Yes.
But then it's like, oh, you're not
you're never coming back.
You're not coming back. But, spoiler alert.
He does.
He comes back. So, you're right. That is why they decide we're going to planet number
three.
Where the the love of her life.
Yeah. Landon apparently sent good data.
And yeah, maybe there may be.
Apparently he's not fraudulent.
What? Love
well,
is...
At the end of the movie, it shows that he was
fraudulent. Love is quantifiable, you know? Yeah. She was right, maybe. Maybe she was right. McConaughey is like, to make sure you get there, I'm going to sacrifice myself.
And, we need the payload.
And the robot. We're both going into the black hole to get...
Well, he didn't tell... He didn't
tell her about that. It was like last second.
We didn't even find out until he's like, and now I'm going to detach. I'm going to the black hole, baby.
He's like, I'm going to the black hole. All right. And she's like, what? Detach. And the whole theater, Taylor's like, no, McConaughey, we love you. And he goes into the black hole, which was pretty crazy.
That black hole was nuts.
When it hit the black hole, it's like we're eschewing what we know in terms of time and space and physics and
everything
and visual representation of space. And it's just like we're throwing shit out there, yep. Man. But the black hole's weird, looks strange, crazy things happen. That's when he passes by the wormhole,
yeah.
Shakes hands with Anne Hathaway, says, mm-hmm. Hey, what's up? Mm-hmm. Hey, all right. And
no, he does that on the way out.
He does it on the way out? That's the one, I thought he did it on the way in.
No, he does it on the way out.
Does it on the way out?
Because he goes...
On the way out, it goes into white?
He goes into the black hole. Right? And everything's black.
Black hole. It's all...
And then all of a sudden, it looks like he's falling through these shafts.
He's in the ship. Right. Yeah. And then it's just him falling through the shafts.
And then all of a sudden, boom, he stops and we're crazy. In Book universe.
It's all books.
Yeah.
And it's behind...
Bookshelf universe.
The bookshelf in his daughter's room.
Yes.
Where he's knocking out the books in a Morse code type way. First to send him to NORAD, and then he's like trying to say, like, stay. Why would he even bother with the stay part? If he could make him stay, then he wouldn't be there.
Maybe there would have been loop and linear time. You can't do both.
Loops and linears?
Because if he made himself stay, then he would have never gone to make himself stay. So yeah. It would have had to break off to another dimension.
Right. Yeah, see? Alrighty. No. Paradoxical type stuff there. So he is the one. He's they.
Yes.
They is he.
Yes.
They cut out the T, take off the Y, got the he in the middle.
Yep.
Matthew McConaughey is in the book universe, sending Morse code through gravity, first to send them to NORAD, send himself into outer space, then to give his daughter the on the watch.
Yep.
In the past, all the information that the robot got out of the black hole.
Yeah.
Right?
All that quantum mechanics stuff.
Which they then use to solve gravity on Earth. Which I think just means building gigantic
spaceships
yeah. That they can then giant Elysiums,
yes,
pretty much,
uh-huh.
That can then get people off that goddamn planet,
correct?
And then McConaughey does his thing, and then the voice he's talking to, that's the TARS, right?
Yes, TARS.
It's so that the consciousness of the robot turned into like, how did that happen? Like, where was TARS existing? It was just a robot. It was just circuits, but then when they got into the fifth dimension, they were able to communicate
to each other
in that
yeah.
manner. Does that mean TARS was like
AI?
Sentient?
AI? Of sorts?
Well, is the AI, once you give a robot AI, is that giving it a soul? Is
maybe.
That where this movie's coming out on
perhaps.
That side of the argument there?
It's just another dimension.
Just another dimension. But the robot was there and they were talking. They were yeah. like buddies. Mm-hmm. It was like, hey, you want to have a beer? All right. Let's get on the
porch. All
right, sit on the porch.
Yeah, and then he
did like, a lot of that. Sitting on porches and drinking beers.
He does his thing and by doing that, releases himself from Book Universe?
Well, yeah, well, I guess... The real day, even though he, there's another day.
Yeah.
There's the day showing him the fifth dimension in terms of the third dimension, right?
And according to McConaughey in the movie, he says, it must be us from the future.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
Right. And then he gets released, like you said.
Yeah, but on the release, he's going one way through the wormhole during a time where...
That's right, because that's when he goes through the wormhole.
Yeah.
He's going through the wormhole there. They shake hands. What's up? And then he pops out next to Saturn.
Just outside the wormhole.
Just outside the wormhole. And then some space rangers find him. So was he just floating around in a suit?
Yeah.
And he was already like 100-something years old by then?
125. Man. He looked good for 125.
Man, I wish I looked that good at 125. I don't even look that good now at 30-something. He's 125. He's like, all right. Look at me. I'm Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, and then he comes back and sees his old lady daughter.
His old lady daughter. Gets to see her on the bed, and she's like, hey, you know what? Don't worry about me. I got my family.
Yeah.
You've been gone for 60 to 80 years of my life, so it's cool.
Well,
it's nice to see you. Nice to see that you come back. I appreciate
it. Go find Anne Hathaway and bang that shit out.
Go find Anne Hathaway, repopulate the planet with not just clones, but the cutest little halfway McConaughey kids you can imagine. With fantastic hair and great abs and a decent singing voice, probably.
Probably.
I don't know. And then he takes the ship. He just takes the ship. He's like, I'm back out.
He's like, poof.
Into outer space.
Well, him and his buddy Tars.
Yeah, he's hanging out with Tars again. It's like Luke Skywalker with Han Solo mashed together with his own little R2-D2.
/C-3PO.
That works for me. Yeah. I'd watch an Interstellar sequel. Of just the two of them flying around, like, solving crimes. Solving space crimes.
Law and Order, space crime.
Law and Order, space crimes. Crazy movie. Fifth dimension stuff. I don't know. That's going to be the weirdest stuff. But you know what? It looks like I'm looking around online. People are digging the movie.
Well, I think it's because it's... You know, it's got that warm emotional center.
Yeah, it's not...
Now, people were put off by 2001 because of how fucking cold it was.
It is. It's a harsh movie to watch at times.
And this movie is very, very not that.
It's got the actual story of a family there in the middle. Yeah. And something we can all relate to. Most of us can relate to. Those of us that aren't orphans or psychopaths or sociopaths. We'll just leave it at those. I thought it was great. Great movie. Very interesting. Looking forward to seeing how it ages. I'd like to see it again on, like, maybe in a normal theater or on home video to see how the sound comes out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it could definitely use, you know, another watch.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty going on there where it was a fast, just under 3 hours.
It's fast 3 hours, though.
It's 2 hours and 50 minutes. And, yeah, for me, it was like, phew.
The beginning kind of dragged.
Well, yeah, it's like a 40-minute setup.
But once
they get into space, which happens quickly.
Yeah, once they get into space, it's fucking on.
It's like, we got shit to do. We got hypersleeps to sleep. We got sad, poignant messages to listen to while McConaughey tries not to cry and then cries.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that happening, too. A lot of holding back the tears, and then here come the tears. Like, someone give this guy another Oscar, because he's crying for it.
Yeah, seriously.
He wants it bad. So there you go. Interstellar. Good times. Right?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah, there you go.
I enjoyed it, and I recommend that everybody see it.
A lot of crazy shit going on in that movie. Well, let us know what you thought about Interstellar. You can tweet the show at CrespoDiso. Also, email us at cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. Go to chriscrespo.com for our review, for my review of Interstellar, which I have not written yet. That little talk there is going to help me be able to write some stuff out, figure some things out there. So there we go. Look for that soon. And also check out episode 96 of Cinema Crespo, which we're getting ready to do pretty soon.